case, Burt Newborn, professor of civil liberties and founding legal director of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU Law School. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, and Sharina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, and Vesta Godarza, and to our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Krug-Meadows, and Carlo DeJesus. I'll be in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. You can go to our website at democracynow.org to see the afternoon sessions. It's the 40th anniversary of the Institute for Policy Studies, and there'll be discussions about various issues all through the day. Again, our website is democracynow.org. We also have a job opening of an annual giving manager. You can check our job listings at democracynow.org. Our transcripts are available online. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Sorry you had to hear that. WHFR Dearborn. That is the theme song for the new WHFR Journal. Why is it new? Because it's never the same, as Jay Kornick says. This is Dennis Reimer sitting in for Jay Kornick, who is taking a well-deserved day of rest. And with me again, and I'm so pleased, is my good friend John Zedekian. John, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure to be here. I'm sitting in for you again, technically.
Yeah. You know, we talked about that after the show. That was just kind of a silly thing to say, but at the same time, you are. You're in my seat. Darn it, you're in my seat.
Yeah.
And in your role, I think, actually will be similar to mine, except you'll be, I'm sure, far more prepared. Well, you know, it's interesting because, and I'll say this right out of the gate, Jay is so prepared. Jay Kornick, you know, he does his homework, and he does the very same things he tells the listeners to do, which is your homework and getting all sides of
Absolutely.
Whatever story there
Absolutely.
Is. We want to get right into it today. Just, I will say right out of the gate that the mayoral candidate, the challenger to the current mayor O'Reilly, his name is Edward Binkley, he did contact us via our contact form on the website, and it was forwarded to me, and I responded with an email, and that would have been the second email I sent, and he didn't, I don't know if he didn't have time or didn't get the email or whatever, but he did say, he stated in the contact form that he would be on campus today for a function, an event,
mm-hmm.
and as you may know, John, he frequently dresses as Abe Lincoln.
He does,
and he,
yes.
And he does, I'm not sure to what extent, but he makes appearances or whatever mm-hmm. as Abe Lincoln, and he was doing that at the college today, so he's probably in one of the classrooms that ended at 1 o'clock, and he asked for information on coming to the studio, and I told him to call me. So he could. I guess the whole point of all this is that he might show up, and if he does, then we would just love it. We would be graciously offering an invitation in to the studio for an interview. We do have locked in for the second half of the show. We have Mike
McCaffrey.
Yes, I always forget that R. McCaffrey, who is the head of the libraries in Dearborn Heights. And
yes.
he wants to talk about some of the things that are going on in the libraries in Dearborn Heights, as well as a funding issue, because there is a millage.
Right.
Is that a renewal?
No, that's an additional millage that's on the ballot for
okay.
November 5th. It's 0.95 mils.
And he'll talk about basically what's going on at the library and
right.
some of the ramifications if the millage passes and if it doesn't. So.
And he'll talk, too, I think, about the reason for the millage itself.
Sure.
There's some misconceptions about funding that I think he'll address perfectly when he gets here.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'll say right now that the opinions expressed here on the Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college. So we do we have that the ability to say what we want, say you know appropriate things. John, very appropriate. Anyway,
got it marked down.
Yes, we can state our opinion on things. But remember that is. The key word is opinion. These are our opinions, our analysis, or what have you, based on our own experiences. And you're welcome to form your own conclusions, your own
mm-hmm.
opinions, and we'd love to hear that. Kind of a big deal yesterday, and I know we don't normally talk about something like this on the Journal because it doesn't affect us really in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But Kwame Kilpatrick was in He had his sentence, sentencing yesterday.
28 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think Bobby Ferguson will be today.
Bobby Ferguson, I believe, got 21 years today.
Oh, he did. Okay. Yeah. And the whole underlying theme behind these, because it could have been as much as life in prison, I understand.
Right.
There was that possibility. But the judge was trying to make a statement, and the statement to me says, and we talked about this off the air, and I think you agree, John, that governments have to have more transparency.
Well, that's very true, and I think, you know, this is something, especially with the Kwame Kilpatrick situation, the region itself has to move forward, and it's not something that just impacts Detroit, it impacts all of Wayne County, all of Metro Detroit, all of Michigan. And you know as well as I do, when you tell people from out of town, you know, you're from Detroit, most people say that, I think. They don't say the specific suburb.
Right.
People say, oh, you know, they give you that kind of a response. And that's just a negative reflection, you know, on what's happening here in truth. So with something like this, I think it's a springboard for closure. A springboard for renewal and, like we said, transparency in government.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's our segue, really, because the story itself, I mean, it's all they covered it as well as anybody can possibly cover a story. It was going on well into the night yesterday. Mm. But our story, and this is from patch.com, and I also saw on the Press and Guide website this morning that it was there was a story about this. Is the headline reads, Dearborn Council President files ethics grievance against city attorney. President Tom Tofolsky says a political speech was written by city employee during normal business hours, which violates the city charter. To summarize this, basically, Tofolsky said that the city attorney, Deborah Walling, she played a role in preparing the election-related materials for Councilwoman Nancy Hubbard prior to Tuesday's council meeting. So basically, from what I understand, Nancy Hubbard, there was an error, she said, regarding there was an email that inaccurately listed candidates that Hubbard is endorsing. Voting for in the November election, and she wanted to set the record straight. Right when she was about to say the names of, you know, these are the people I'm really endorsing, Tofolsky said, "Whoa, slow down. Okay, this isn't the proper." His exact words were, "This is political in its nature. We have to have some decorum here." Mm-hmm. He went on to say that I'm going to request that the Board of Ethics look into this matter because it's a clear violation if Ms. Walling wrote political speech while serving her in her dual role as an employee of the city and corporation counsel for the 7-member city council. So she helped Nancy Hubbard write something. It was while she was on the job.
Apparently.
He says that's wrong. Mm-hmm. They both the ladies said, no, that didn't happen. We did talk before the meeting, but she didn't write anything for me. That's not true. I didn't tell anyone to write anything, and they didn't. So this should be interesting. That will, if Tofolsky has his way, it'll be looked into by the ethics board. Really interesting. I mean, I talked to a couple people about this, and they said, boy, is he nitpicking. Yes and no. I mean, I think the responsible thing is to look at, and again, we're talking about transparency here, the responsible thing is to look at what people are doing on company time and seeing if it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. Is there any bad will between them? I don't know. I have no idea. This is a story. Won't you agree?
The one thing I think that makes me wonder about this whole thing is how many other people knew that something was going to be said or something was written, you know, or what have you, or this just sprang up. I mean, I wasn't at the meeting. I didn't,
You know. There's video of the meeting, but I don't know if it was the entire meeting. I don't think so. Online, they wouldn't put an entire meeting. So, no, I don't know. Are you saying that he's the only one who said anything?
Yeah, I don't know that. It seems to me, of course, that, you know, he being council chair, council president, would, you know, be the one to want to maintain decorum, as most council chairs do. But whether or not maybe it was a preemptive strike against something, we don't know at this point.
This is interesting. And, in response to the questions about the prepared statement, Hubbard said, she wrote the letter herself prior to the meeting. She said, Deborah, this is a quote, Deborah Walling had nothing to do with it, she said. I sketched out my thoughts alone at home. I did not tell anyone to write anything for me. Tofolsky said he's not convinced and wants to pursue this investigation with the city's ethic commission. He says, this is Tofolsky. I have the utmost respect for Councilwoman Hubbard serving Dearborn all these years. However, the common viewer knows what happened when they watched the council video. Interesting. He went on to say her statement was in the envelope that was handed to her by Ms. Walling. It just goes to show how deep the current administration will go to secure the right people on the city council. He says the city's charter states, while on duty, no political activity shall occur during working hours by public offices or employees. Cefalski said, this is the concluding quote, I've lost some respect for Ms. Walling's ability to do her job, and I will wait to see what the ethics board determines in this matter. So, yeah, he's taking it all the way. She says it didn't happen. Whatever. I mean, it seems like it might be hard to prove, too.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, in a way, he's right in what he says about city employees not engaging in any sort of activity,
right.
Political activity, because I, at one time, was a city employee, not in Dearborn, but that was something that we were told right out of the gate. You don't do political activity on city time.
Exactly.
Or use city resources to do it. In this case, of course, you know, it'll all come out in the wash, but, you know, like I say, I think, you know, he as council chair, you know, certainly has a right to throw up a red flag if he thinks something is wrong.
Right.
Or...
He jumped on it, too.
He did, from what everybody has been saying, but we don't know.
No.
I mean, do we know what was in the envelope?
He says it is the letter that she read from after receiving...
Yeah.
She received the envelope, and then she read from it. That's... I guess it would be similar to, you know, I work for the city of Dearborn Heights. I'm sitting in my office at WDHT offices, and I'm working on a script for an upcoming PSA or whatever, and I get a phone call from Mayor Dan Pletko. Hey, could you, you know, I got a speech coming up, and I need some help with it. Can you take 15 or 20 minutes to look it over and make some revisions?
Yeah.
No, I can't.
No,
and, of course, he would never ask me, and I'm not saying that.
Hypothetical situation.
Totally hypothetical. Yeah, that would be the similar situation.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, that would be... totally behind closed doors, whereas Cefalski's saying, no, this happened. Watch the video, because it happened right in front of your very eyes. So, guess who's going to watch the video?
Yeah.
Me? Yeah, of course.
You and everybody else now that hasn't so far.
Both of our listeners are going to...
Your mother and mine.
Yeah, and probably Jay. Maybe Jay.
There you go.
Okay, so that's... Yeah. I kind of was going to hold off on this, but I don't know that Mr. Binkley will be here, so we did not cover this last week, and this is a letter to the editor from Edward Binkley, and he's it says, candidate disputes firefighter's claim. And if it's okay with you, John, I'm just going to read it exactly how it is here.
Sure.
Okay? To the editor, I, Edward Binkley, am running for the mayor of Dearborn. This is, by the way, Press and Guy, dated Thursday, October 3rd. I, Edward Binkley, am running for the mayor of Dearborn. In the September 29th edition of the Press and Guide, there was a letter to the editor. It was titled, Firefighters Announce Endorsements That I Take Issue With. Mr. Binkley says, I am okay with this letter until you get to paragraph 7, which reads, quote, in order to maintain the trust of Dearborn residents, Dearborn Firefighters Local 412 conducts a thorough screening and interview process before endorsing a candidate. It also says in paragraph 10, they check backgrounds and qualifications and did interviews of the candidates that were running so they were able to endorse someone. So why was I not interviewed for this purpose? Asks Mr. Binkley. They also state that they need someone who is going to be strong on public safety and efficient for city services. Since they did not interview me, how could they know that I meet these qualifications? Seeing as how I am willing to, one, give a big portion of my first year's pay back to the city, and two, start programs to inform the residents of what public safety is and how to respond to it. My personal background contains a letter from Wayne County Commissioner Richard LeBlanc, Democrat from Westland, telling me that he is willing to support myself, my family, and community with anything that I need help with. I also was sent a letter from Councilman Robert Abraham saying congratulations on a job well done. I am also a veteran, having served in the U.S. Navy. Sure, I collect Social Security right now while I'm fighting for my VA benefits. When I win, I'm willing to give this up for the residents of the city because I genuinely care about the city. My family has been here since the mid-1800s. My great-grandmother was born here in 1852. Now, according to their endorsement list in the firefighter's letter to the editor, I also see two names that the mayor also endorses. So I was wondering whether they were interviewed, and if all of the rest of the candidates who were interviewed don't really care about being endorsed. I just want the truth to be told, so I would like for Dearborn Fire Lieutenant Joey Thorrington, President, International Association of Firefighters Local 412, to retract this letter and tell the truth, reconsider his endorsements, and issue a letter of apology explaining why I was not asked for an interview, so that the people can have a choice to vote for who they want instead of being suggested to vote for the endorsements as stated. Signed, Edward Binkley. Boy, okay, let's break this down. There's a process here, obviously, and I know that you're going to get to that because I believe the rebuttal, which is in your hands, John, was in this. I think it was in the Wednesday's issue.
Right.
What's it? Is it dated on the?
It's
top?
Dated Tuesday the 8th.
Okay. Yeah. So it went online then.
Yeah, it's dated Tuesday the 8th. And you're right. There is a process to it. I went through it several years ago when I was a city council candidate in Dearborn Heights. There is a process to go through. In response to Mr. Binkley's letter, Lieutenant Thorington writes back and says that the union met with Mayor O'Reilly last March to discuss the firefighters' endorsement. This is from the letter. We officially endorsed the mayor for re-election in early April, long before the primary election. He goes on to say that as an incumbent, as an experienced leader of the city of Dearborn, that Mayor O'Reilly has demonstrated a strong public safety as a priority, and he's been in command through some of the toughest economic times in Dearborn's history, and that they're very pleased as a union with Mayor O'Reilly's leadership. So they felt that there was no reason to explore other options for the mayoral endorsement. The city council, Lieutenant Thorington said, has more variables and open seats, which made it a much different situation.
Right.
With all seven council seats up at one time, you have at least 14 candidates, at least for the primary, that are running. Now, the firefighters went on to say their endorsement is an extremely important responsibility. It's not one that they take lightly, and it's their ethical obligation to use candidates' qualifications, background checks, and interviews when selecting candidates to endorse. The lieutenant goes on to say that nearly all of the political candidates who made it through the primaries, and many who didn't, approached the firefighters for an endorsement. They completed the endorsement questionnaire, and then they either interviewed or spoke with us in person. Their response to Mr. Binkley was, "You did not."
So in other words, I'm going to stop you here. The process, part of it is the candidate has to go to and say, look, I want to be a part of this. I want to be interviewed. I want to fill out, I don't know if it's an application or whatever, but the proper form.
You make initial contact with the union to seek their endorsement.
So it seems like Mr. Binkley thought that they would come to him. So that might have been the question. I'll let you finish. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. They're just saying that they endorsed the candidates that they did based on their philosophies on public safety, their plan to keep Dearborn safe and vibrant. They found it worthy to take the initiative to seek the firefighters' endorsement, complete the endorsement questionnaire, and interview with us, the union, in person. And then they went on to list the candidates besides Mayor O'Reilly that they did endorse in the upcoming election.
What were those names?
I know. In alphabetical order, Councilman alphabetical by first name, Councilman Brian O'Donnell, Councilman David Bazzi, Councilman Robert Abraham, Council President Tefelsky, Mike Cerini, Sharon Delmage, and Susan DeBaggio.
Okay.
And that's the response from Lieutenant Joey Thorington from Local 412.
Wow. All right.
Wow. So the bottom line is apparently that, you know, when you need to seek, you know, an endorsement of a city union or any sort of union, that you need to make contact with them. And I would hope Mr. Binkley will show up today so that we could ask him in person.
Sure.
But it appears, according to the two letters, that just like you said earlier, Mr. Binkley apparently thought that this was something.
That was a little bit automatic. Sure.
Sure.
That's reasonable.
And the firefighters are saying, no, you have to come to us. And like I said, that's what I did, you know, when I ran several years ago. So that's just.
Now, to be clear, you know, you had said we hope that he comes in. He and I actually, he sent I'll say it again. He sent an email. I sent a follow-up email, and he hadn't responded. So he either didn't get it or didn't have time. Mm-hmm. So he may not be here. He wasn't sure where to actually be. He just said he would be on campus, and he would appreciate the interview. So he may be here. But if not, we're still going to try to get him on an upcoming show before the election.
Sure, absolutely.
I wanted to go. I noticed Mike McCaffrey's here, so I wanted to go over a couple of things before we get him in here in the driver's seat. This is really cool. Not that big a deal and not really a surprise. I wasn't completely aware of this program, so this is cool. It's the headline is, again, this is Dearborn Patch. City Council renews contract with SMART for senior transportation services. Mm-hmm. SMART being the Suburban Mobility Authority for Regional Transportation, those buses. And this is cool. Seniors can ride the SMART shuttles anywhere in the city of Dearborn for $2 mm-hmm. round trip. Did you know that?
I did, actually.
That is so, I love that. I love that. Dearborn City Council voted Tuesday to renew the city's senior services contract for another year at a cost of a little over $203,000. The city has partnered with Suburban Mobility Authority for Regional Transportation since 1997. And these are for Dearborn residents age 60 and older, as well as individuals with disabilities. That is really something. And that's they transport approximately 230 riders each week. That is, I think that's cool for $2.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, Dennis, where, you know, and you have elderly relatives, as do I,
sure.
and they rely on transportation like that. You know, a lot of times, you know, us kids and grandkids, you know, we're busy. You hate to say it, but we don't have the time that we'd like to afford, you know, to our senior relatives to pick them up and take them here and there. We do our best, but this is where something like this comes in to help out. They take them over to Westbourne Mall. They take them over to other shopping centers around town, and it really helps out that that is available on a consistent basis, that they can go do their shopping, get their goods, come home, everybody's happy. So it's a beautiful partnership that the city and SMART have had for a while, and no pun intended, but it was smart that they went ahead and renewed it.
That gives me faith in humanity.
Yeah.
For a dollar, you can go one way, $2 round trip.
$2 round trip.
They make the medical things a priority, obviously.
Yeah.
Just real quick here, this was Wednesday's Times Herald. I had an opportunity to meet there's a writer for the Times Herald now. He's covering Dearborn Heights City Council meetings. He was there when I was there in my capacity for the TV station. He was there covering the meeting for the Times Herald. His name is Bob Oliver, and I like him. He's sharp. He's really sharp. And his article is the front page headline, Access Reports Good Start to ACA Enrollment. And that ACA being the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
The Arab Community Center for Economic and Social Services is reporting a good turnout as the first days under the Michigan Health Insurance Marketplace enrollment take place. The marketplace is the state's version of the Affordable Care Act, which went into effect on October 1st. Access Community Health and Research Center Senior Director Adnan Hamid said many people have visited the center, which is at 6450 Maple, since the enrollment period opened to talk to staff members about health care options. He said on Tuesday, the first day of enrollment, we had some people waiting outside the facility at 8:15 a.m., even though we don't open until 9. He says it's exciting because many of these individuals have never had health insurance before. This is another really, really cool thing, and I don't know how you feel about the Affordable Care Act. I look at it as it doesn't matter how we feel about it. It's going to be the law.
It's the law.
It is the law now. So we should do everything we can to make it a productive program.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one man's opinion, and you might echo that. So for the people to come out and start doing that, and just can you imagine, I don't know if you have health insurance or not, but for somebody that hasn't had it for a long time, and maybe they need it, maybe there's a pre-existing condition or whatever, just the mm-hmm. security blanket of having insurance, I think that's a cool thing. And that alone, in my mind, is enough to pursue something like this.
I was, in 2009 or 2010, involved in a group with other voiceover talents from around the country. We actually read and recorded the healthcare bills, and there were four at the time that were being considered, word for word, in a strictly bipartisan, or nonpartisan, I should say,
sure.
Educational type of program, so that people who didn't want to leaf through it could actually go to a website and listen to the bills being recorded. There's a lot of heavy stuff in there.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, it's ridiculous to, and of course I'm sure a lot of it is necessary, if not all of it, in terms of the language, but there's a lot of stuff to absorb, you know, in there, to say the least.
Oh, yeah.
So anything where any social service agency, I think, could make it a little bit easier for people to understand, and especially, you know, those who don't necessarily have English as a first language.
Oh, exactly.
It's going to be that much more difficult. This sort of reminds me of a program that when I was with the Postal Service, we had an issue where those of Arabic descent needed to understand the passport forms a little bit more. So we got together and made an instruction sheet that was in English and in Arabic,
okay,
so that people understood it more. And that helped people from that community, that part of the community, understand the forms and understand the process a little more. This, I believe, does the same thing for the Affordable Health Care Act.
And this is so complicated.
It is. It's very complicated.
According to Bob Oliver, and I'll just finish this part here, he said Access was chosen to be a navigator for the program by the state last month, and Hamid said that as a navigator, Access analyzes an individual's personal information and health care needs to determine the best plan options for each unique case. That's exactly what they need to do. Mm-hmm. I told, because as a citizen or whatever, as a, you know, I'm confused. On top of that, when it comes to your health, there's underlying stress if you're not feeling well. So sure. they're coming in here and they're kind of cleaning that up. Also by Mr. Bob Oliver, he wrote DPS, Dearborn Public Schools, begins third year of anti-bullying program. Mm-hmm. We've all seen, I mean, the bullying thing is just front and center. And mm-hmm. over the last mm-hmm. couple of years, we've seen so many different situations. Camera phones are a good thing and a bad thing mm-hmm. because I've seen on, you know, school buses, I'm sure there was absolutely. One very recently, and, yeah. and this poor kid was getting stomped on. And so this is not something that when we were kids, there was bullying. It was just part of life.
It was
a lot
different.
Yeah, I think
it was
so,
a lot
too.
Different.
I think it was more verbal. A lot of people are getting hurt now, mm-hmm. you know, and high school mm-hmm. kids can hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're 8 and 9, maybe. You
get elementary school, they can too.
Well, yeah.
As we've seen from some of the videos.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. And according to Mr. Oliver, the Dearborn Public Schools began the third year of its anti-bullying program by throwing a celebration highlighted by student performances and speeches by local community leaders at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center this past September 30th. The program is called Response to Bullying Program. Was started in 2011 to identify, address, and prevent bullying in the district schools. This year, the focus is on hurtful speech, and the theme is, quote, "I was just kidding doesn't count. If it hurts, it's not funny." Very interesting.
Yeah.
And we'll have so many people do that. No, I was just kidding. I'm just
mm-hmm,
kidding.
Mm-hmm,
yeah, too
mm-hmm,
late.
Mm-hmm.
It already
too
hurt.
Late is right.
So yeah. Third year, the program's in place. Good for them. Really good for them. We're coming up on the
bottom of the hour.
At the bottom of the hour. So I'm going to play a couple of... what do they call Jim Hightower things that Jay gave me there. You may know this, John. Every week we'll
program
play.
Program elements reports.
Thank you. Yeah, they're his Hightower updates, we call them. And I'm going to play. One's called The Government Subsidized Boom, and the other one is called Backs of Others. So we're going to play that and take this short break, and then when we come back, we'll have Mike McCaffrey in here. So please stay tuned.
Thomas Carlyle called economics the dismal science. But he was only half right. Dismal, yes, but a science, no. It's more like religions, where reality is shaped by belief or blind faith. And in the case of free market zealots, it can turn into a cult. Thus, we see them pointing these days to the dazzling light of the soaring stock market, proclaiming fervently that Wall Street's spectacular rise from the ashes of the Great Recession is proof from the God of Mammon that these are boom times. Lo, the magic of the marketplace is upon us. No, it's just the wizardry of the Fed. For 5 years, America's central bank regulators have been funneling two massive subsidies into Wall Street banks and giant corporations in an ungodly effort to keep them flush, while praying that they might use these government windfalls to create a job or two. The first subsidy essentially amounts to giving $85 billion every month to big banks. Yes, $85 billion. The idea is that this capital will then be channeled into investments that nourish our grassroots economy. In practice, however, bankers are putting it into gimmicky high-risk investment schemes that create nothing, into buyouts to expand their already too-big-to-fail empires, and into even heftier paychecks for themselves. The second subsidy is the Fed's relentless policy of artificially holding interest rates close to zero. This has severely punished middle-class retirees who count on getting interest incomes from their savings. But it has been a blessing from on high for huge corporations wanting to buy out their competitors or, in a totally unproductive bit of marketplace voodoo, to buy out themselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, the Fed's tinkle-down monetary policy has produced a truly dismal level of job creation and a hellishly wide chasm of inequality.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Having been raised in a small business family and now running my own small business, I always find it heartwarming to see hard-working, enterprising folks get ahead. So I was really touched when I read that even in these hard times, one extended family with three generations active in their enterprise is hanging in there and doing well. Chrissy, Jim, Alice, Robbie, Ann, and Nancy are their names, and with good luck and old-fashioned pluck, they've managed to build a family nest egg that totals right at $103 billion. Yes, six people, 100 plus billion bucks. That means that these six hold more wealth than the entire bottom 40% of American families, a stash of riches greater than the combined wealth of some 49 million of their fellow Americans. How touching is that? The good luck that each of them had is that they were either born into or married into the Walton family, which makes them heirs to the Walmart fortune. That's where old-fashioned pluck comes in, for the world's biggest retailer plucks its profits from the threadbare pockets of low-wage American workers and impoverished sweatshop workers around the world. Four of the Walton heirs rank as the 6th, 9th, 10th, and 11th richest people in our country, possessing a combined net worth of $95 billion. But bear in mind that one's net worth has no relationship to worthiness. These people did nothing to earn their wealth. They just inherited it. And as Walmart plucks more from workers, the heirs grow luckier. In recent years, while the wealth of the typical family plummeted by 39%, the Waltons saw their wealth grow by 22% without having to lift a finger. This is Jim Hightower saying, how odd that the one percenters consider themselves our nation's makers and consider workaday people to be takers. With the Waltons, it's the exact opposite.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Thank you, Jim Hightower. I think he wanted to talk again, but we're not having it. We're not doing that.
Just cut it right off.
Yeah. Oh, you can do that. I'm in the seat.
You are. You're in the seat of power.
I totally get it. I get why Jay has been doing this for so long.
That's exactly right.
And, I feel smarter sitting in this chair.
Yeah. You look smarter.
Yeah. Oh, it's the glasses. I need reading glasses now that I'm 40. Anyway, and I have everything on it. If you guys do something to irritate me, guess what? I can just turn a switch.
That's right. You're like Verlander. You're in complete control.
Well, it's. That is a horrible analogy because he's on a different planet than me.
He's on a different planet than most people.
We are really fortunate right now, John and I, to have in studio with us Mike McCaffrey, who is the library director for the city of Dearborn Heights. I've had a ton of interaction with Mike because himself and the people you work with, Mike, are so diligent about getting us information at the TV station, which we can then pass on to both our viewers. Anyway, no, but there's so much going on at the library, and so I think it's awesome that you're here. And then, of course, in a few minutes, we'll talk about you have an upcoming millage, and we'll talk about the ramifications, what the money would be needed for, and what the ramifications are if it passes or doesn't. But tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do, and how long you've been doing it?
My name is Michael McCaffrey. I've been the director for about almost 6 years now. My family has its roots in this area. I've always called this area home. I mean, I've bumped around a lot of different places from Haiti to Florida and back up here, and I've lived a number of places, but this is where I like to call home because, when you move a lot of places, you want to find roots somewhere, and this was a place that I always called home with my grandma and my aunt. So, I'm extremely fortunate to serve the Dearborn Heights residents and, in the Dearborn area, and it's something I've always loved. And, I've had probably over 10 to 12 years in the information industry. I've worked on the private sector on the information side. I have a master's in library science. I have an undergraduate from U of M Dearborn. It's a place I've always called home and a place I've always loved. So
I have to echo that. I love the library. It was it was an escape for me. I love to read, and when I was a kid, that was
the place to go.
I really think that was where I was most comfortable. That or in a dark movie theater. I'm not getting all sick or anything. I mean, what I'm saying is that, you know, you can be completely alone and anonymous.
Yeah,
in both places, I think. Yeah. But yeah. The thing that I marveled at, I raised my family in Dearborn, know a lot about Dearborn Heights, but didn't necessarily have, I had never stepped foot in one of the libraries in Dearborn Heights until I, you know, began working at the with the city. There's so many programs. There's so much stuff going on.
Yeah.
Talk about some of the things that you guys do for all, I mean, it's all ages, really.
Yeah. We have programs going year-round. I always feel it's important with some of our revenues to give, you know, back to the people as much as we possibly can. So I have a programming budget, and I make sure to set aside some specific money to actually make sure to run a lot of programs. And we, you know, we fill up our newsletter, you know, every quarter with all kinds of different things for kids and for teens and for adults. And it's one of the things that, I take pride in. As a director of the library,
what are some of the programs for kids?
We got a couple things coming up. One thing I wanted to point out: we have one of our joint initiatives, Nankin Area Reads.
Mm-hmm.
This is a cooperative effort with Garden City, Livonia, and Wayne. And what it is we're all chipping a little bit to get a bigger author. Jonathan Rand,
okay.
Who's going to be presenting a author talk at Livonia, and we tie a bunch of our kids' programs. We tied two puppet shows into this.
Do you know what library is it? The Carl Sandburg, or
it would be the Livonia Civic Center Library,
right by City Hall there.
Oh, right.
It's 5 miles in Farmington. Sure,
yeah.
5 in
Farmington. And he's going to be presenting November 14th at 6:30. It's a really neat cooperative effort. You know, we have a number of programs at a number of libraries.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone's interested in the area, they need to contact either Carolyn Kennedy or John F. Kennedy Jr. Library. We have about 91 spots for Dearborn Heights residents. So
cool.
Feel free to drop a line if you want to talk to Jonathan Rand. He's the author of the Michigan Chiller series and the American Chiller series, which is a real popular amount of books.
Is there a cost involved for the people that want to?
Nope. There is no cost involved. It's
absolutely free.
Wow. Yeah, you just sign up and go. So,
and that's another thing. I always equate the library with free, because you're going there and you can read books and nobody's charging you out. Well, obviously, well, with my history of overdue books, I probably paid for each book over.
My history here and there too. Yeah,
yeah. But and let's not talk about videos from the movie star. But seriously, I always. It's free. When I first went to the Centennial Library here in Dearborn, and it said, yeah, you can only take out, I think it was 10 CDs at a time. I'm like, 10? And I can take them home? You know what I mean? It's it's a hard concept, because it's so few things in life are free. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, or I will say, I don't know how to word this. I won't say unfortunately, but it does come at a cost of these programs that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And and that's probably, I would imagine, what the millage is about.
What we had recently is around 2007-2008 is just a plummeting of property values. We were operating on a shoestring for a long, long time, a real narrow line for a long, long time with very little margin for error. I know our library is a very efficient operation. At $23.50 per capita, we're over $14 lower than the state average.
Wow.
Which is, a significant difference. So we run a very, very tight ship. And basically that means we operate both libraries more efficiently than many cities operate one in terms of per capita operating expenses. Even at that low level, the property values fell dramatically. What this millage is hoping to do is to rectify the budget gap and to make sure that we anticipate costs for the long term, in the next 10 to 20 years, and make sure that, should another emergency arise, another recession arise, because in a 20-year period, it's very tough to think that there might not be some other bump in the road.
Oh, it's impossible to predict, sure.
Right. But, usually about every generation there's something that happens. So in a 20-year period, it would be able to absorb that and make sure that the library is good for the long term. So that's the main thing that's about.
So the library definitely took a hit then.
Yeah.
When the economy sunk.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It did. And you know, we had a fund balance going into that because we were so penny conscious and careful. But you know, that gradually has gotten, you know, worn down, and eventually it you know, is going to run out. So you know, we need to make sure to rectify that situation as best we can before that happens. So
if it doesn't, if you don't get that money from the millage, what would happen? What are the ramifications?
Well, initially there'd be some initial cut in services. You know, the fund bounces around till about June of 2015, but initially there'd be some cuts in services as we tried to save some money and try to stretch that mm-hmm. time out as much as possible.
And that's not a lot of time either.
That's not right.
No,
it's not a ton
really
of time.
Not.
So, yeah. And you know, after 2015, we may have to take more drastic measures. So,
okay. Yeah. Back to the program. Some of the things that you have going on there. What can people enjoy? And are there similar programs at both libraries, or is there a difference depending on which?
Well, there's we sometimes do programs at both libraries. Sometimes it's just at one. Sometimes it's JFK. Sometimes it's CK. You know, it kind of gets mixed up. A couple other things we got going on every year around Halloween. One of our adult services librarian, Rob Butler, likes to bring in kind of ghost hunters or some kind of a interesting, mm-hmm. you know, paranormal group. And this year, we have a program on the eeriest UFO encounters, October 30th from 7 to 8:30 p.m.
Is that a Wednesday?
It is a Wednesday.
Okay. Yeah,
Wednesday, October 30th. William Kokolensky. I hope I can get that name right. who is the state director of the Michigan chapter of the Mutual UFO Network?
Okay,
he's going to be coming in there and talking with it. And these are generally pretty popular programs.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
you know, we've had a psychic in there, and it's kind of interesting stuff. And you know, people get a kick out. It's good.
You
good
did
stuff.
Have a psychic?
Yeah, we had a psychic in there.
Did they try to contact Houdini? Because didn't he promise at some point he was going to come back? Or that's on Halloween, actually, isn't it?
Well, he died on Halloween.
And he said that he told his wife or something. He goes, if anything ever happens to me, I'm going to come back.
I'm going to come back.
You know, but he was interesting because he found a lot of those people that said they were psychics were fraud. So,
It's you know, on some of these programs, often my role as director is the program gets run, and I'm often the guy on the outside making sure the rest of the library is running okay and, you know, filling in a desk or doing whatever is necessary to make sure the program goes. So I don't actually get to attend a lot of the programs.
Will you get to attend this one?
Let's see if it's Wednesday. I'll probably peek my head in a little bit, but I'll be there, but I'll probably be helping out at the desk or making sure everything else is okay. So,
is there a cost associated with that?
No, there's not. You know, most of our programs, as I scroll through my head, unless they involve some kind of supplies that are specifically needed,
right?
And you bring your own, there really is not a cost. You know, I've always felt it important for people to use the library. That's what it's there for.
Sure.
That is something I always place a high priority on. I want people to use the library. You know, it's a center for democracy. It's a center for information. And I always feel it's important to have that going. And so, you know, a lot of our programs, basically, I'll just say all of them, as far as I know, are basically free. So.
Mike, you just touched on it just a little bit in that last comment, but how do you respond to people who, in the internet age, say that libraries are obsolete? Why do we need libraries?
Well, a few reasons. First off, libraries place a value on information. Information has value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, working in the private sector in the information industry, I know information has value. There is money associated with that information. When the internet initially came about, you know, people constantly see some free information. Well, the quality of information you get is often is often proportionate to the cost you pay for it in a lot of ways. And a lot of materials, a lot of books, a lot of reports, a lot of reference materials that, that you get at a library that, you know, have a cost associated with it, gradually those costs are also arriving on the Internet as well. And even accessing the Internet at home isn't free.
Right.
You need an Internet connection.
Yes and no. My neighbor's pretty good about leaving his son.
Yes.
Get that free Wi-Fi they're doing.
Right, but it's not really stealing. But go ahead. Sorry,
technically, yeah.
But even with the Internet connection, you still need a computer.
You
still need software. You still need a printer. You still need someone to fix it if it breaks.
Sure.
You still need instruction on how it works. There's a good number of people that don't ever want to use a computer and are forced to use a computer.
Sure.
So, we have a whole lot of people that come in for these reasons. And as government institutions and as employers and everyone else forces everybody to go online, not everybody has the resources to sit there and pay for a Internet connection, which is increasingly going up in cost every single day.
That's a good point. There are a lot of people. I don't think people are aware of this. There are a lot of people that are not online. Like, maybe they are at work as part of their job or whatever, but they go home, they don't have... One of my close friends still has dial-up. And it's just because, she doesn't go... She goes online for work. Mm-hmm. She only has it at home in case there's an emergency. She probably only pays, like $10 a year or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't even know. Can you get dial-up now? Could you?
I think you can. I mean, I think you can.
In Oklahoma or something.
But as a medium, that is kind of fading a little bit.
Sure.
And, even people I know that have dial-up are trying to move to cable. And so there is a cost for all of that, first off. And then, so that's just getting on.
Yeah.
And then the quality of information you get varies wildly.
Oh, it does.
So there's no guarantee there, and there's still, the numbers speak a completely different thing. Our library gets over 80,000 hours of computer use, which speaks to a lot of people in that area.
80,000 hours
per year.
Oh my gosh!
So it's a pretty high number, and
that's awesome.
Over 240,000 checkouts and stuff. So we get a heck of a lot of use. We get a lot of foot traffic, and even not just the traditional role of checking out books, but there are meeting rooms and some of the programs we've discussed offer a big value to the community as well. We get hundreds of reservations for meeting rooms every year, and so just finding a place, and that also has an expense, and that is often has a cost associated with it a number of places. So,
well, when they had the city's celebration of 50 years, you headed up a wonderful it wasn't really a question and answer, but like a breakout session regarding historical things, and it was very comprehensive. And I want to tell you, I really enjoyed that. We got it on for the TV station as well.
You went way back to the 1600s, I think.
I tried to basically go back to 1600 when Mr. Cadillac, that for short, came and founded Detroit.
What did you, Cadillac?
It's a very long French name.
Antoine de la
Cadillac.
I never knew the Mayflower landed right here in Detroit on the Detroit River.
I didn't either.
I was really pleased to know.
The history professors are knocking on the door.
That's right. You're listening to the new WHFR Journal. My name is Dennis Reimer, sitting in for Jay Kornick. I'm here with John Zedekian, and Mike McCaffrey is our special guest from the Dearborn Live. He's the director of the Dearborn Heights. Dearborn Heights Libraries. Not to be confused. And what else do you have there? You're pointing at that.
Another event should be pointing out. Our book sales coming up.
Oh, yeah.
This is an extremely popular event. It's Thursday, October 24th from 10 to 8. Friday, October 25th from 10 to 4. And Saturday, October 26th from 10 to 4. The bag sales also on Saturday. The Friends, as usual, have another fantastic collection. So we're eager to open that up.
And the Friends is a group that supports the library.
Yes. Yeah, the Friends of the Libraries are a essential group for us. And actually, if anyone's interested, feel free to contact Carolyn Kennedy Library. You know, they basically take in donations for us, and they raise a great deal of money for us. They're one of the reasons that we are able to have some programs even off budget, because they sponsor them. You know, they donate a number of books. What happens is the books come in the door. They're donated by residents mm-hmm. or sometimes other institutions. They take those books. They process them. They look for things that the library might be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we take them, we see if they're good fit for the collection. If not, we give them back, and then the friends try to sell them in the store, or they try to sell them at a book sale. And failing that, they usually go off to other charities, or if they're in very, very bad condition, we recycle them.
Right.
The friends do a lot for us. They raise in the neighborhood of, you know, sometimes $34,000 in terms of donations to the library per year.
Wow.
Which, you know, enlarge our collection, you know, a great deal. And in terms of just, you know, monetary support, they're usually around $10,000 to $12,000 for programs and laptops and furniture and all kinds of other things that they raise for us.
Where's the book sale? Which library?
Oh, it's at Carolyn Candy Library.
All right. Now, if people, I want to do a blanket statement here. We are not endorsing or sponsoring or telling anybody what to do regarding the upcoming millage vote, which is, what, November 5th?
Right.
And so we're just here to give information, and I think Michael agree that we want our listeners to have as much information as possible on every subject. Sure. I mean, learn more about everything.
That's what it's all about.
But when it comes to somebody, a city or an entity asking you for money, I personally do a little more homework at that point. You know what I mean? As opposed to blindly
Certainly.
Doing something. But so we're not telling anybody what to do. But if they do want more information, where can they go or who can they call?
If they're interested, you know, we do have a just a budget fact sheet that's available at the library. It just explains the basics of how much money we've lost, and
right.
And you know where you know you can vote and when to vote. You know, it just explains what is on why the millage is needed, basically, and you can make your own decision.
Also, then we can physically go to the library and ask
right,
for it.
Right. Just that's just the budget sheet.
Is it online really too? Is it on the city website?
I don't think it's on
the
city.
You have anything
on
the library website?
It's on the library.
That's what I meant. I'm sorry.
It's on the library website.
But there's a link to the library website from the city. Okay.
Right.
Got
right.
it.
And it's mainly just a budget fact sheet explaining why the millage is needed.
Okay.
Explains, you know, if residents want to know what the cost is, they can look that up and decide for themselves
awesome.
Whether or not they want to support it.
And is there a phone number they can call if they want directions to anything? Or I always found a phone number...
Yeah,
really helpful.
If the main library number at Carolyn Candy Library is 313-791-3800.
Okay.
And that's at Carolyn Candy Library.
And that, again, the election is, or the vote is on November 5th. There's a lot of things on there, and this is something that I think is really, it's important for people to know about. You know, they're going to be staring at it on whatever ballot. It's good that at least we can give them a little bit of background.
Yeah, there are also some information available on Facebook and Twitter as well. We do have Facebook pages for each of the Dearborn Heights libraries, both Carolyn Candy Library and John F. Kennedy.
So all you have to do is like it, and then you can get that information via Facebook,
that's
right?
That's correct, yes. We have a good number of likes for both.
Mike, I want to thank you. I'm going to go over. We have just a few more minutes. I welcome you to stay and kind of enjoy yourself here. There's
sure.
some things I want to announce, though, that are coming up. And we talked about something going on, paranormal. What did you say, like the spooky stuff on the 30th?
The eeriest UFO encounters.
Well, in Dearborn, and this is from the Press and Guide, a paranormal event will support Dearborn Historical Museum, which, of course, we know they need money. It's in a two-hour presentation to benefit the Dearborn Historical Museum, former Dearborn resident and author Karen Dale Stefaniak Trask. That's her full name, four words. We'll tell the audience about her many ghostly encounters. Encounters with the Paranormal, that's the name of this program, will take place at 3 p.m. Saturday. So that will be tomorrow at the Dearborn Historical Museum, 915 South Brady. Tickets are $5 in advance or at the door. Additional donations are appreciated but not required. Says here, from her first encounter with an apparition in her childhood home in Dearborn to discovering that she has been given several unique gifts, her life has been, to say the very least, unusual. That's this Karen Dale Stefaniak Trask. She will share these stories during the fundraiser. Trask also looks forward to sharing with the audience how her real personal encounters with the paranormal propelled her to write paranormal fiction novels, and how working with a paranormal investigative team was her beginning to pen her first nonfiction book. So, there's no phone number here, but it does say a question and answer session will follow. Questions are encouraged, and it's so called the museum.
Yeah, called the museum.
The museum and the historical site is very helpful to us on our 50th anniversary. They gave me some good pictures.
Oh yeah,
very,
I would imagine.
Helpful, so
yep, and they're hurting for money. They had a fundraiser. I'm going to say about a month ago, and it was like a beer tasting, and I thought that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get people out. You have beer and food. You don't have to. I'm not encouraging drinking, but I imagine it was well attended. And if food's there, guys, so am I.
And I think it's something that people maybe not necessarily would have expected out of the historical museum.
Absolutely. I'm thinking outside the box.
Yeah, beer and hot dogs and music.
Outside the keg.
You believe in any paranormal type stuff?
I don't.
Are you into that?
Know.
No,
I kind of am, but I don't know. I feel weird saying it, but I kind of believe. I had an experience. I did. I had an encounter with something that to this day, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
It was weird. What about you?
I believe it.
You do?
I do. Yeah.
You really do?
I believe it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then so do I.
I watch Long Island Medium, the whole shot.
Oh, really?
John Edward, love it. Yeah.
Yeah, my parents had a couple of events, too, that they like to talk about as well.
So, I mean, this paranormal, I mean, it's not, I just don't like scary movies. I don't like all that stuff. So I get this feeling that I think if you're open to things, that will happen.
Yeah.
That's what I believe. And I don't want to be open to too much.
I'm not into the scary stuff either, but I think there's just some things that go on. I mean, I've had a lot of dreams that, you know, you just can't explain, you know, why they would happen that way.
Okay.
Well, it is what it is.
Okay. Well, I'll give anything a chance. I do. Yeah. I am open-minded.
Right.
Another event coming up. This is a big one. This is the Dearborn Animal Shelter's annual Black Tie and Tails fundraiser. It's a fundraiser gala taking place at the Dearborn Inn on October 25th. According to this wonderful email I got from my good friend Sandra Bolton, PR for the animal shelter.
Bolton does everything.
This soiree is the organization's largest fundraiser of the year and helps provide needed monies for daily operations of the shelter. It is themed in the Roaring Twenties to salute the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter's 20th anniversary. The evening is emceed by the charming and kind Fox 2 sports director Dan Miller, who I really like. I like Dan Miller, good guy. And Congressman John and Mrs. Debbie Dingell are honorary co-chairs, so I think they'll be there. The crown jewel of the event is the promenade of adoptable pets, where the red carpet is rolled out to feature some of the shelter's available rescued animals. I love that. That is really cool. So this is
The 25th.
Yeah. I don't know. See, this isn't the actual press release. So I'm wondering how people would get information. I guess you could call the animal shelter. Because Sandra's the PR director, but I have her personal number here, and I don't want to give that out.
No. They've got a website. They've got a Facebook page.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we know it's the 25th. In this, I should have printed out the press release. What I have is the email here, and there's a cost involved. It's October 25th. It's the shelter's Black Tie and Tail fundraiser. If you go online, you'll find out all the other details. But and you know what? We still have time, so I might plug this next week, and I'll have more information. Sorry about that.
Oh, no.
Also, I got this from Dave Mustonen from the Board of Education. He's their PR guy, so I'm getting a lot of PR people. The second annual Robert Cipriano Cross Country Meet is set for October 19th, and that's
next week Saturday.
Yes, and it's just there's all kinds of stuff involved here. We're really, really running out of time. But this event, it says it's a one-mile race for Dearborn Public School staff members. An hour later, hundreds of fourth and eighth graders will hit the course in a series of 1 and 2 mile races. And then the Cipriano meet will take place at Ford Field in Dearborn. Brady and Sherry Hill, the district has teamed up. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm reading this as I go along, and there's just a ton of information here.
Their website?
Yeah, always. It says this year there's an event honors Mr. Cipriano. Is there a website? There's always a website, but it's a really long one. So go to dearbornschools.org. That's what it says right here, dearbornschools.org. Staff race begins at 8:30. The final race between eighth graders should wrap up around 1 p.m. So it's an afternoon thing, and you can still get involved. So, okay, thank you, Mr. Mustonen. It's called On Your Mark. It's set, go, and again, dearbornschools.org. Really quickly, bag leaves for curbside pickup every week. This loose leaf collection is set to begin October 21st. You just set them at your curbside. The best method to ensure your leaves are picked up promptly after they fall is to put them in yard waste paper bags or the big gallon 20 to 32 gallon containers the city gives you and put it by the curb. Place the bags or containers on your easement by 7 a.m. and they will be picked up that same day.
That's on your regular garbage day.
Yep.
Garbage pickup day. Yeah.
And it's scheduled to begin the week of October 21st and will end December 2nd. Leaves raked into the street are not picked up every week. That's a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they'll probably do that on the neighborhood's public service days, but they usually do it like twice in Dearborn, where they'll have you put all everything out on your curb, mm-hmm. and then they come in. The problem with that is when they don't get to it right away, because let's face it, it's a big city, and they got a lot of stuff to do to get to it. If it's not taken care of, it gets really slippery. Yeah. So I tell people, you know, you're better off just putting in the bags. You know, and these bags come down in price. Anyway, so there's that. And then two other things. The Firefighter Burn Drive Pumpkin Sale begins October 19th. The Firefighters Burn Drive will hold its annual pumpkin sale at the Fire Safety House, which is next door to the Outer Drive Station. It's from noon to 5, Saturdays and Sundays, October 19th, 20th, 26th, and 27th. Any size pumpkin is $5. Visitors can climb on a fire truck, have their face painted, enjoy free Coney dogs, cider, donuts, and cookies. For more information about this and other Burn Drive activities, call 313-478-6761. That's 313-478-6761. Finally, we have Dearborn Heights Fire Station is having their open house tomorrow.
Yes.
From 10 to 2.
10 to 2.
And I talked to Fire Marshal Dave Brogan. He says they have so much stuff planned. I mean, this is a big deal anyway. It's great for kids. I mean, when you were a kid, you love it?
Absolutely. Love it.
Yeah.
Still do.
Exactly. And they're rolling out their new fire. Chief Kirk said they're rolling out the new fire truck.
Very exciting stuff.
And the kids get to see all this stuff. And then they have a game where you can squirt the water at fake flames and put them out. Mm-hmm. There's food. There's drink. No, there's no cost to actually be there. I'm sure the food and drink, is a nominal fee. But this is just a neat thing for the family. You can go and have a really good time for little to no money, spending little to no money.
And that's tomorrow and Beach Daily and Ford Road.
Beach Daily between Ford and Cherry Hill over there.
That's headquarters building.
Yep. Yeah. So that's there. 10 to 2. Get there early, stay late. And I think whatever money they do collect always seems to go to a good cause.
They donate to MDA. They donate to Goodfellows. Yeah, it's amazing.
And they have that burn camp for kids. Yeah. That's what the Chili Cook-Off is for. Just a wonderfully, gentlemen, thank you. John, thank you again for being here and sitting
in. My pleasure. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mike, we appreciate the information. Joanne is here, and we are going to start getting ready right now for Highway 61 and the Best in Blues. Again, my name is Dennis Reimers. I'm sure Jay will be back next week. And he'll make fun of me. Anyway.
He already is.
Yeah, he probably is right now. Is. Anyway, folks, have a great day, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks again.
Thank you.